This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, Big Mood, Little Mood listeners. I want to remind you of all the cool things that happen when you sign up for a Slate Plus membership. You'll stop hearing ads on all Slate podcasts. You'll stop hearing me reading ads on my Slate podcasts. Think of how much better your life would be if you didn't have to hear that. I know mine would. You'll be supporting Big Mood, Little Mood, and all of Slate's shows. Slate Plus helps keep our shows going. You'll get to hear bonus episodes of this show, as well as all your other favorite Slate shows like Slow Burn, Amicus, and Political Gabfest. And you'll have unlimited access to every article and advice column on Slate's website, never hitting the paywall, plus an additional question and answer from me each week. Support our show and Slate's journalism and sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/mood plus. That's slate.com/mood plus. Hello and welcome back to Big Mood, Little Mood. I'm your host, Danny M. Lavery, and with me in the studio this week is Carrie O'Donnell, a writer and comedian who also co-hosts Sexy Unique Podcast. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Danny. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to have you here. I have so often immensely enjoyed the videos that you put into the world.
Oh my God, thank you.
Which have so much to do with like incredibly deflated moments of trying to like turn something on or off or like switching from one conversation to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So like I feel like you're going to be perfect for like any questions that involve like switching from one task or relationship to another.
I've never heard someone describe like the little silly videos I put out that way. So that makes me feel like extra cerebral. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm like really insightful.
Sometimes it's fun to exist in the realm of like deflation.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that description.
It's so, especially just like when you're trying to either like criticize or intimidate someone and then you end that call or you end that particular discussion and you go into that totally just neutral, like staring at a self-checkout stand, like, what am I doing? Blankness. That's really, really beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've been a fan of your writing for years and I think this is just us complimenting each other now, but yes, it's mutual.
I mean, I do think it is nicer to give advice with someone that you admire and esteem, but someday I will try to get someone on the show where we just cannot stand each other and try to figure out how to advise a third party.
I think that would be kind of punk.
It would be a very stressful, like, two parents who hate each other still trying to raise a kid together, but on a way smaller scale.
Like Cold War energy.
Cold War marriage. That is absolutely an energy that I would like to bring to a future episode of the show, but not this one. This one, I just want to be friendly.
Let's do it.
To that end, would you mind reading our first letter?
Yeah. So this is subject, can't forget. My boyfriend Chris and I, late 20s gay guys, have been dating since before the pandemic. He was clear from the beginning that his family wasn't accepting when he came out. And as I got to know him better, I saw more red flags. His very strict religious father took out his mental health issues on the whole family, both physically and emotionally. Chris spent years in therapy. That was a slip.
That's
moved
beautiful.
Many hours away and only saw his parents once a year when we met. He has a loving found family, a great career, and a commitment to managing his mental health. He's barely seen his family since a blowout argument about homophobia back in 2020. The pandemic made it pretty easy to avoid them. This summer, work has taken him closer to them, and he agreed for a visit. Suddenly, they're desperate to get in his good graces. They threw a welcome party. His dad is willing to politely talk about me. I didn't ask for this. And they're acknowledging the serious mental illness that runs in the family. Chris is ecstatic, but I don't trust any of it. I'm suspicious about how all of this is only happening on his dad's terms, not Chris. There haven't been any apologies. Where were they during his suicide attempts at 2020 when he asked for help paying his hospital bills? Are they just buttering him up to try to push the church on him again? Chris is upset that I keep giving neutral responses to his excitement. How do I walk this line?
Yeah.
I felt that.
Did you feel kind of more like familiar with Chris's scenario, with the letter writer scenario? Are you more somebody who gets mad on someone else's behalf?
I mean, I get like in my own relationship with my fiance, like I get, if I feel he's been wronged in any way by like anyone, I get very like, I'm sort of South Jersey, Philly. So like that kind of anger comes out and I'm like, who do we have to talk to deal with? You know what I mean? So I get very protective. So I do relate to the protective side and feeling a little suspicious, but I also relate to the boyfriend because like it took my family a few years to sort of get their heads around me being gay, like my immediate family after I came out. And now they're like super supportive, could not be more embracing of me and my fiance, but it took a minute. And I didn't have, obviously, there are elements to this that I can't relate to, especially the types of dysfunction going on here. But I do relate to that sort of uncanny feeling of like when my parents began asking me about my gay life, it felt kind of like, you know, it was ecstatic, but it was also like I felt suspicion kind of in the way the reader wrote. So I relate to both of them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, nothing that the letter writer has put in here made me think like, wow, this is really weird on your end. Like, why don't you think this is fantastic? And then on the other side, I could also really understand there are times when it can be really lovely to be angry on somebody else's behalf, but it can also go south pretty quickly if somebody isn't asking you to be that angry on their behalf, or at least it can like get in the way of handling something as a team. So, you know, letter writer, you know at least that the sort of like, hey, your hair looked amazing, or like the lighting was so good, Liz Lemon responses are like no longer working. Like Chris can see right through them. He knows exactly what you're really thinking when you say something like, I'm happy you're happy, or like you seem pleased.
Right.
So
yeah, I think it can like add, as you said, like can go south, and it can also create conflict between you two, which is just like, wasn't there before.
Right. And you don't want to make this harder for him.
No. And I think it's such a delicate line when you're dealing with someone's family, especially like someone you're in a relationship with, like you have to really toe as close and as like connected you feel to this person. You have to remember their family is still their family. And it's, you know, it goes, it's deep. It's like in the genes, you know, and it's in like the marrow of someone. So you have to really toe that line, even with someone that you feel as close to as your partner. Do you know what I mean? Like you have to be delicate, I think, when it comes to family. Even if there is like dysfunction and things that you feel are unhealthy, you have to kind of toe that line carefully because it can backfire on you.
Right. Just because it really does, it has to be down to the person whose family it is to make the final call. And obviously, if the letter writer ever got to a place where they felt like the family is mistreating him and dragging him through the same things, and I can't stick around for that because it's too much for me, that would be an understandable, if sad, reason to break up. But I think just in terms of right now, the question first is like, can I control Chris's, you know, desire to connect to his family? I think the answer to that is pretty straightforwardly no. So then the next question is like, how do I behave? Like what is not just being studiously neutral going to look like? And I feel like the first thing to say is just to Chris, like, you know, I think in like the sort of spirit of like connecting with him is to sort of just be like, I get it. The jig is up. Like I've tried being just neutral and I know that that hasn't like worked for you. I know you can see through it. So you don't have to make it like an incredibly heavy apology, but you can kind of say like, I can see that's not working. I'm sorry I tried that on you. Here's my problem. On the one hand, I'm happy for you. On the other hand, you know, you've shared a lot of stuff with me about your family that sounds really painful and I feel really protective. How do you want me to handle this? Like, do you want me to just kind of give you a lot of room and space on this to maybe talk about it with other people in your life, respect your choices? Are you prepared to maybe hear me list a concern or two of mine, or do you just not want to hear that because I won't force it on you, but I do have some questions. Do you mind if I like maybe ask you a question or two about like how you feel and what you envision or expect from them and maybe what you envision or expect from me? And that way you can kind of have a conversation where hopefully he can, you know, share more about what's going on with him and you two can find some common ground that's not just like, nope, we're going to go spend every weekend with them from now on.
Right. And I think that's really kind of managing expectations of your own and then trying to work with the expectations that Chris has about what he wants out of this new reconnection. And I think it's really sad that I understand, again, that how protective the writer is, because, you know, it sounds like he had a really tough time mentally. And like, I mean, a suicide attempt is like, that is grounds for being extra protective, especially if it feels like somewhat fostered by the family dynamic.
Right.
So that is understandably, I think that should be bluntly talked about. I just want to make sure that you're mentally feeling healthy about this. And as your partner, just know I'm here for you if you need to talk to me about that. Because that comes first before all of this. But I think knowing that people do change, people's opinions do change and they become enlightened in some way, either that's in a really small way or a big way, there is progress. And I think while it's normal for the writer to be picking up on sort of nefarious, maybe sinister undertones, like it could also just be that they have had some kind of awakening a little. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being too optimistic. So maybe just like be cautiously optimistic, maybe, or cautiously understanding.
Right. Yeah. I really think that there's a lot of room in between like a full, perfect amends and like total change of heart versus like some coming together and finding common ground that might feel good for Chris right now, might later not be good and cause more problems. But like, it could just be like they went 2 years without talking to him. They really missed him. They felt really bad. They're still kind of, you know, innately homophobic, but are at least now willing to let go of some of it or put the lid on some of it in order to reestablish some contact.
Yeah.
And Chris might decide that that's good enough. And again, I can really feel why. Well, that's nowhere near 100%. We know everything that we did wrong. We're sorry for it. We'll never do it again. Here's how we're going to make it up to you. What else do you need that you might want on his behalf? But, you know, it is, you know, a change, right? Like they are offering him polite acknowledgement of his relationship, putting a kind of emotional spotlight, welcoming him at home. And it sounds like at least for now, like acknowledging mental illness in a way that they haven't before. And again, none of that's like, wow, you must be really unforgiving if you don't think that's amazing. I just mean like, I can appreciate why Chris finds that meaningful. Like that sounds like something they've never done before.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if it comes to a place where the writer starts spending time with them, because it sounds like right now it's mostly just polite chat about their relationship. But if there comes a time where Chris involves the writer in family quality time and situations like that, maybe them seeing him with having a partner that's protective and feeling that there is a clear boundary now, they might be deferential to that in a way. Because they're sort of learning how to be around this, a relationship that maybe before they were not understanding of. But if they see you with Chris, they can maybe pick up on the fact that, you know, he has a new family now in a way. Like he has a new support system, and they will be deferential of that. And then in turn, be respectful. I don't know. Again, this is all like optimistic, but
right.
I'm just basing it off the experience I had with like my parents really coming around. And them having, you know, they're very respectful about my relationship and the boundaries, and they feel like very clear. And when I feel boundaries are not being respected, I say something and they listen, you know? So I don't know. I think remembering that you can't control someone, and if Chris he's going to spend time with his family, you know, that you can't really stop that. You can't control someone. You can't control their actions. You just have to be supportive of him and be a place for him to feel safe at home. So,
yeah. And it does seem like, you know, it doesn't sound like Chris is like talking about like moving back to be close with his family or like ignoring his found family or like blowing off his career. It does seem like he's at least somewhat aware that like, for the most part, he has a life outside of them. He just is really happy that he's now able to spend some more time with them. Again, that could change. You might find that just you can't stand being in a relationship with somebody who has like a polite but homophobic family. And
yeah,
that might end up being a line for you that would be, I think, pretty reasonable.
Of course. I agree with that. I think that is triggering for any queer person.
Yeah, I would totally understand if anybody was just like, that's not for me. If I want to date someone, either their family is going to be totally on board and cool, or they don't talk, and that's what I want.
Yeah. I think all these scenarios are very acceptable, and I think I just think the writer should feel like confident that all the things that he's feeling is valid and understandable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to deal with someone's family.
Mm-hmm. It is. But I think if you can just go to Chris and say like, hey, I know what I've been offering you hasn't been working. I'm in a slightly complicated position because I want to be happy for you, but I also feel protective. Given that I'm not on the exact same page as you are, but I really, really respect that this is your family, your choice. What would you rather have from me? Would you rather have a little bit less time we talk about it, but when we do, I listen more and ask you questions and defer to you? Would you rather I say just like, I'm suspicious, let's take a break? You know, again, I could imagine him having a number of different reactions, but just ask like, what do you need from me? And if he says, I need you to be as happy as I am, you know, then you can at least be honest and say like, I don't think I can give you that. Is there anything else I can give you? Otherwise, like, let's have a loving and respectful fight about it. But I would encourage you not to say something to him. Like, I don't think that you would, but just like, I wouldn't try to push him in the direction of trying to force him into more skepticism by saying, remember, they weren't there for your suicide attempt. Like, he knows that. He knows that as well as anyone on the planet knows. And yet he has still decided that he feels like it's worth trying to reconnect again. So
at the risk of sounding politically incorrect here, like, people get weird about their families, like friends, you know, people get it. It triggers like a very like fight or flight mode, I think, with people. So like, I just think it's so important to tread that line very carefully, because people can snap into like, back the fuck up. You know what I mean? And like, I've experienced it. It's like, when it comes to family, like, and I don't mean to sound like Caroline Manzo from Real Housewives of New Jersey, but like, a family is thick as thieves. But it's like, it is true. Like, people get like molecularly charged about their families. So just be careful.
Especially if they've been hurt a lot often. Like, especially if they have felt like, I've always wanted like my father's like love or respect.
Right.
And I'm finally getting a little bit of it. And no, it's not nearly like maybe what I would have deserved, but it's, you know, way, way more than I've ever had. People can get really protective and defensive of that. So yeah, also tread lightly, not just because it's good in terms of respect, but because I don't want you getting your head bitten off all of a sudden when you're like, wow, I thought my boyfriend really valued me, who's only ever been nice to him. And now I bring up like one note of criticism against his father, who's been in many ways a jerk to him his whole life. And he's suddenly like acting like his father is this little baby bird who fell in our front yard. And I don't want you to be in that position.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like, you know, are they just buttering up him up to try to push the church on him again? Hopefully not. You know, I would just say like, cross that bridge when you come to it. Like, you don't have that problem yet.
Yeah. I think baby steps is important for everyone in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's all I have for this letter. Are there any like final thoughts you have for these two? Or do you just feel like we've helped them as much as any two people can ever be helped?
I think we give the best advice ever. So no, I wish them both well. That's a tough, sounds like you really love them though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope you guys can talk about this in a way that feels like you can kind of stand down from some of the more challenging elements of it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, I will take our second letter, which also has some like tendentious connections to the Bible Belt and like challenges there. So, you know, we get to keep going with our theme today.
Love.
The subject is don't want to abandon anyone. I, they, them, grew up in the Bible Belt. Last year, someone from my hometown who's trans feminine but closeted reached out. We have a complicated history, but I tend to extend extra grace to closeted folks. Now I'm not sure reconnecting was the best decision. In middle school, they constantly pressured me for pictures in my underwear because that's, quote, what girls do. I repeatedly said no. They persisted. I cut off contact. They remember things differently, that they came out and I rejected them. I'm comfortable holding the truths in both these experiences. When we reconnected, I was clear about my boundaries, no pictures, platonic interactions only. They constantly toe the line, and when I hold firm, they lament that my reactions are based on, quote, ancient history. The last straw was a romantic advance around Christmas. I gave up. I ghosted. I struggle with this decision. Part of their problem is a lack of language / ability to disentangle girl stuff from sex stuff, like why I'm okay using their, quote, girl name but not receiving underwear pics. These are learnable skills if given the time and space. I also worry that my rejection could contribute to the violent political messages that the world thinks trans feminine people are perverts or predators. I know it's not my job to compromise my boundaries for another person's growth, but if queer people don't extend each other grace, who else is going to? I would appreciate your insight or even for language for a final message to minimize unintentional damage. I guess the upside of this letter is it's very straightforward. Like, it's sad and painful, but like, this person has just been harassing you. They harassed you in middle school and they're harassing you now, and you feel really guilty because you want to be extra nice to anyone in the closet. But people in the closet are just as capable of harassment or sexual assault or violating boundaries as anybody else in the world. And being in the closet is not like a moral position.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's like a, I think queer people sometimes, and it's put on us, I think also by like the outside world, but I think in within the queer community too, I think people forget that like queer people can be toxic and destructive and like bad sometimes.
Right.
And it doesn't matter. Like, it's, you know, obviously like I think that you're, the grace that you're giving this person is really lovely, and like there's a lot of solidarity there with like supporting another person who's been through something similar as you. But I think they sound just kind of fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, again, like it wouldn't matter if this person weren't closeted, if they were out and doing this, if they were cis and doing this, if they were like, pick an identity and pick a degree of outness, and it would still be fucked up. Whatever somebody is saying, like, here's what kind of person I am, therefore you need to be cool with sending me pictures in your underwear. That's just not true. It's not how underwear works. It's not how identity works. That's not how relationships work. So, you know, I want you to feel really free. Just because, like, the line that they were trying to use on you was like, it's just us gals, let down your boundaries, does not actually mean that by saying no, and in fact, I no longer want to talk to you, means you're contributing to, like, any kind of, like, bad political messaging. Like, you don't have to counteract the bad political messaging of all trans feminine people should be punished. With this particular closeted person has tried to get me to send naked pictures a lot, and I don't want to, and they don't listen to me when I say no, but I need to bend over backwards to like make up for some cosmic error. You absolutely don't. That's not how anything works.
No, and I think it's, you know, obviously like the time we're living in right now is so loaded and like scary, and I think there's like satanic panic kind of again about like trans people and like gay groomers and things like that. And I think I respect and I appreciate the concern that you're talking about, but like, this has nothing to do with the outside world. This is like just you not feeling comfortable and someone not hearing that.
Right. And you're not in a position, like no one's like calling you and saying like, we're going to fire this person and like cut them out from all community. Like, you're not in any position to cause them harm. So when you say, if queer people don't extend each other grace, who else is going to, you know, that's a lovely sentiment. And I would just encourage you to take this one out of the conversation of extending each other grace, because I think at least in the model you're sort of discussing, one thing that is required is like willingness to respect other people's boundaries on both sides. You are not trying to cut this person off from community. You are not trying to make sure nobody gay ever talks to them again. You're not like taking away their right to someday like come out or, you know, like take any steps that they want to around their identity. You're simply saying, as long as you keep demanding naked pictures and hitting on me, I'm not going to talk to you. And so like grace would not in this like context be like, yeah, keep sexually harassing me. Like, that's not grace. That's just continued sexual harassment. So really let go of this fear that you're like in a position to cause this like asshole harm.
Yeah. And I think like telling someone to leave you the fuck alone is not political. It's just like, there's nothing. It's just you respecting your own boundaries. Right. And this person is not doing that. So you have to take it upon yourself to like remind them that they have to. And it's hard. It's easier said than done. We've all been in positions where that sort of thing, it's hard to navigate that, but you have to just hear yourself and voice that, because yeah, no one's going to come for you. The queer brigade isn't going to barge down your door and be like, that wasn't right. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't politically correct. Like, that's not going to happen. You just have to like look out for yourself. And it sounds like you're already on the way to doing that.
Right. Right. And so the only really advice that I would offer you, letter writer, is, you know, that line where you say you're comfortable holding the truth in both these experiences. I would say stop. I would say hold your truth. I think your truth is true. And I think that their version of events is a fucked up way to try to manipulate you out of saying no. So hold your truth. And if like truly, like, which is your best judgment, like evaluate the truth that like this person has offered you. It smells like bullshit.
It smells like a lot of bullshit. It smells like just an easy way to excuse toxic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, hold on to that truth close to you, because that's what you know, honor that. I'm like almost at a loss for like this other person's like rationalizations.
Right.
I mean, I get like it just feels cheap.
Mm-hmm. And I think letter writer, if there's ever parts of you that feels like, I'm worried this plays into like scary tropes about trans women and people, I think the way that you can kind of like truth test that one is just say, like, this is a pretty like girl lesbian way of harassing someone, and girls and lesbians and bi women are capable of harassing people. Like,
yeah.
So if some of the underlying fear is like, if somebody was harassing me, then that must have something to do with some sort of like underlying, you know, harassment essence, which only belongs to like masculinity or men or guys. And it's just like, I think that's maybe the thing here that needs to be rooted out, is just this idea of like, well, you know, obviously if you were harassing me, then it must mean that your trans feminine identity is somehow suspect. And it's just like, nope, every identity can harass people and does. There's no group that's exempt. There's no identity that's exempt. It doesn't disqualify you from your own identity. It just means that you are your identity and you're harassing someone. You need to stop. And so again, like regardless of her identity, if she was saying like, this is just cute girl stuff between us girls, it would be wrong.
Yeah, there's, and I forget it too, but there's so many truths. It's not just one or the other. And I think also like, if you do explain this, if you do tell this person how you're feeling, they might learn something from it. And, you know, if they are closeted, it's, you know, it sounds like they have limited contact with like the queer community or the trans community, like maybe they'll hear what you're saying and like it'll just help them grow and push them to like reach out more and become more. I mean, that's like a best case scenario for this.
I do think I will push back against that, just because I think that's like a genuinely sweet place to come from. But I don't think this is a question of growth.
Right.
I think the letter writer also says like, you know, I think that the problem is a lack of language. I don't think it's a lack of language. You know, letter writer says, I was really clear about my boundaries, no pictures and platonic interactions. And then
you don't
respect
really,
that.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. You are not insufficiently clear. They're not so closeted that they don't know how to treat people well and with respect.
I had a teacher once in college that during one of my intro to creative writing class, I would always like defend everyone's stories.
Aww.
And she would go, here he is, the great defender.
Oh, that's very kind.
But I shouldn't be defending. This is just, I guess I was seeing that. I too was sort of duped by this person's like, I'm closeted, I'm scared, you know.
Yeah, feel bad for me. Let me step on your toes.
I too was warped by that. But again, you don't owe this person anything. They can fuck off.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate, I do. And I think that's part of why this person has been able to, like, you know, hurt this letter writer on more than one occasion is really playing on the fact that like a lot of queer people will go out of their way to help somebody who's in the closet because they really feel for them and they know what that experience is like. And that
but it's inexcusable. It's not. Right. Lots of people have been closeted and not done something like this.
Right, right. And especially given like they did this in middle school, they did it again. You seems were like queer from jump. Yeah, I think if
they
it were
to go get help.
Yeah, if it were a question of just like explaining it one more time better, it already would have gotten through to them. They're doing this on purpose and they need to knock it off and they don't need you in order to stop doing the wrong thing. I think that's really the key here is like, there's no, you know, don't worry if there's a part of you that's just like, I just wasn't clear enough. I just didn't say it the perfect way. That's not how this works. And just give yourself freedom to hold your own truth and block that number.
And you know, my last words is like, take this very compassionate, empathetic view that you seem to have as a person and like you share that with like friendships that can give it back to you and are healthy. And like, you know what I mean? Like there's so many other people out there that deserve the compassion and empathy that you seem to be giving this person. So, right. You know, there's a lot of that to give and a lot of that to get. And this person doesn't seem to be working in that department. So I think move on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Take that empathy, use it with other people who might need help coming out, other people who might need help dealing with the world. There's lots and lots of room for you to do that. But the idea about combating the idea that like trans femininity is inherently suspect is not the same thing as saying no trans feminine person has ever harmed anyone else.
Yeah,
which would just be a totally unreasonable burden to place on any like
group. That's so sinister.
No, and it's like always uncomfortable to talk about because I always want to be like, hey, like gay and trans people, like have it rough. Like, let's not talk about when
we do have it rough, but yeah. There are people in having that rough. There are people that are not good. So it's true.
Well, I think that's all I've got on that one. And I would love, as a sort of palate cleanser, to hear about something that was both sexy and unique. And I'm wondering if you can speak to anything along those lines.
Oh my gosh. Sexy Unique Podcast is the podcast I co-host with Laura Marie Shainhalls. We are both LA-based writers, comedians. Laura Marie Shainhalls, an Oklahoma queen. She's one of my best friends. We just, you know, she'd had the pod for a while before I came on as like a permanent guest host or permanent co-host, I should say. But she started it to cover Vanderpump Rules and like talk about it in like a funny, but also poignant way. Cause it is, there's so much humanism in these shows and just like the staring into the abyss to be dissected. And then we started recapping other reality shows and just, it's really just us talking about like the state of everything and pop culture and what's happening and celebrities being cringe and social media. So it's just sort of like I described it recently as like a spirit Halloween with a diptyque booth inside it.
That is truly beautiful. That's like when some species like steal old hermit crab shells and you get like two totally different entities in one.
Yeah, it is very hybrid. It's very like hybrid piggybacking. I love some high, but I love, love, love low too. So we like to vacillate between them.
That sounds truly, truly beautiful. And I'm so glad to think of you being, do you have a favorite diptyque smell? My wife is like insanely into diptyque. And she has like a hierarchy of smells.
Well, she and I need to get together and peruse a diptyque store because I'm currently wearing, I have three, and it's like, here's the thing, like I pretend like I can afford this, but like I don't live a life, I don't have a life where I can like easily afford diptyque, but I find ways to do it. You know what I mean? Whether that be just being like fucking broke for a few weeks, like I make sacrifices to feel luxe sometimes. And it's all I have, you know? Sometimes it's all I have to get a diptyque candle or to get some cologne. But I love rose scent or Eau Capitale, which is sort of rose patchouli. And it's very just like, you know, you're walking in. It's like classic. You're walking into just like upscale gift shop or something. And someone, some stately elegant woman was just walked by you and you're like, what were you wearing? You know, it's like one of those things.
It is truly unreal.
Isn't it crazy?
I've been inside a handful of Diptyque stores, and every time I've walked in, I just feel immediately like something's happening inside my entire body. And I don't know if it's okay or not, but I need to sit down.
It's not okay, but they fucking do it anyway. And then I always fall for it.
They're the most powerful smells.
They really are. It's just, it's true head turning smell. Like for years, I've been trying to find my own scent. And I grew up wearing Polo Blue because my mom is a very preppy person and just wanted me. My dad wore Polo, so I just always wore Polo. But mm-hmm. I kind of grew out of it. And I think as I got and came into myself as like who I am as a person, I was like, that's not right for me.
I thought Clinique Happy was the best a person could smell. And I still might think that. I haven't smelled it in a while, but I bet if someone got me some.
My mom wears it.
I would still agree.
It's like,
I thought that was a boy smell.
She wore it on her hand. Like, wow. She wore it, like, she got, like, the cream, I think, for her hands.
What an innovator.
She's an innovator. But, yeah, I've just been experimenting. And I think I'm in recovery. And I think it's just, like, it's very soothing for me to, like, just collect smells and, like, go to a candle store. There's one in West Hollywood called Candle Delirium. Did you ever go there?
I've never been to Candle Delirium. But I can absolutely co-sign the whole... Once you're in recovery, you either really get into like expensive smells,
yeah,
or eating gas station candy or like some weird intense hobby that involves like ingestion at a really intense rate.
Well, I do all of that. So like I cover the Spirit Halloween Diptyque, like I'm covering all the bases. But yeah, I just like it's this candle store in Santa Monica, like near where FUBAR used to be. And it's just like, this is for all you West Hollywood heads listening out there, everyone else listening is like, please shut up. But
I think actually people find it really relatable and that yeah. This show should more often like veer away from giving advice to people and just into rating expensive candles.
It's this place is a haven and I go in there and it's lofty and it's decked out. They're always very seasonal. It's somewhat appalling decorations. It's just so like, yay! You know, like you walk in and you're like, you know, and it's
happening.
It's all happening. It feels apocalyptic, but also like things are going to be better. It's all the feelings in one store anyway. But yeah, I love Diptyque. I just love smelling.
Love to smell.
I love to smell good.
Carrie, thank you so much for going up to the buffet with us today.
Thank you, Danny.
How much I appreciate it.
I'm so, so fun to be on. Thank you so much again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I'm ever in LA and I need a meeting and a Diptyque candle store, I'm going to hit you up.
All right. I'll be your guide.
Thank you for joining us on Big Mood, Little Mood with me, Danny Lavery. Our producer is Phil Circus, who also composed our theme music. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/mood to sign up to subscribe or hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're using right now. Thanks. Also, if you can, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to know what you think. If you want more Big Mood, Little Mood, you should join Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. Members get an extra episode of Big Mood, Little Mood every Friday, and you'll get to hear more advice and conversations with a guest. And as a Slate Plus member, you'll also be supporting the show. Go to slate.com/mood plus to sign up. It's just $1 for your first month. If you'd like me to read your letter on the show, maybe need a little advice, maybe some big advice, head to slate.com/mood to find our Big Mood, Little Mood listener question form, or find a link in the description on the platform you're using right now. Thanks for listening. And here's a preview of our Slate Plus episode coming this Friday. Again, I think it would be absolutely fine, even if you're not super close with this aunt. Like, you can absolutely just check in and be like, hey, wanted to make sure, like, what the story was there. Because it would be a little weird if she legally changed her name but wanted everyone to still call her Karen. Maybe it's not unheard of, and I suppose it's possible that she only wants to change it with new people and is fine with her family or whatever. But you can find this out. It's not that weird to call. Go ahead and call, like... I think one of the things that can be strange about something like this is you start to realize like, oh, I'm an adult now. I don't actually have to have my relationship with all my relatives mediated through my parents, but I don't necessarily want to be besties with anyone. But you can absolutely call, find out. It doesn't have to get to the level of like a huge fight with everybody. But by all means, if she has changed her name and she wants people to call her by her new name and everyone's being kind of a dillweed about it, you know, you can be in her corner and encourage them not to be. And like, hopefully she didn't change it to something that she'll have to change it again. Like, hopefully she didn't go from Karen to Missy Ann. To listen to the rest of that conversation, join Slate Plus now at slate.com/mood.